Hi, this is your berry bestie, Sasha. Welcome to Life in the Berry Lane. Welcome to Life in the Berry Lane. I'm your host, Sasha Holder, and this is my berry story. So I'm going to take us all the way back to childhood. And at the time of this recording, I am 50 years old. So I grew up in the 70s and 80s as a child. I remember, as far back as I can remember, being a heavy child. I wasn't always heavy. I can see pictures of myself as a very small child when I wasn't overweight. I was a very tiny girl. I'm not 100% sure at what age I started gaining weight, but I know I was quite young, and I remember at approximately 6 years old, my pediatrician telling my mom that I needed to be on a diet. She was not pleased with that, and he told her that I needed to eat yogurt. In 1980, yogurt was not tasty to children for the most part, and today it's pretty packed full of sugar, the yogurts that are marketed toward children, but also they weren't packed full of protein. At any rate, I didn't like yogurt. And my mom didn't think I needed to be on a diet because I was 6 years old. And she said, you don't put a child on a diet. So I remember being teased for my weight in school. I remember my brother, who is about 5 years older than I am, ruthlessly teasing me about my weight. He would say things to me like, fatty, fatty, 2x4, can't fit through the bathroom door. He would call me thunder thighs and hippo hips. And I didn't like it, and it was very hurtful. My name is Sasha, and a lot of people call me Sasha. And kids in school used to call me sausage. And I didn't understand that it was because my name was mispronounced as Sasha that they were calling me sausage until I was an adult. I thought they were calling me fat, but one of the kids who called me sausage as a kid told me it wasn't because my weight, it was because, he said, because your name is Sasha. And I said, but my name is Sasha. But regardless, I understood why they said that. I understood how they made the leap from Sasha to sausage. So those were all very hurtful things. I know that when I was a child, I could play all day long, and I did play all day long. I was very, very active. My friends and I were constantly outside playing, riding bikes. At one point, we had roller skates and skating outside, also riding our bikes with our roller skates on, which is probably not advisable. I ate the same foods as the rest of my family, comparable to my peers, but we didn't have junk food growing up. My mom couldn't afford it. So I'm not exactly sure how I gained the weight, or I guess I do understand better now how I gained the weight. And it wasn't based on what I was eating or how much I was eating. But nevertheless, I gained weight at a very rapid, pretty alarming rate. Looking at pictures of myself, I wasn't roly-poly fat, but I was definitely far too heavy for my age. I know that I gained about 20 pounds per year between about third grade and eighth grade. I gained about 20 pounds every school year because my weight on the scale correlated with the size of my jeans. And I didn't understand why I gained so much weight or even how I gained so much weight. We didn't have a scale at home. My parents were divorced, and there was a scale at my dad's house, and I would weigh myself on his scale. And I would hold pretty steady at whatever that weight was during that particular school year until I got to about summertime, and we, outside running, playing hard all the time, and my weight would just go up, and then I would need a whole new pant size, which it isn't uncommon for children to need a larger size clothes, but it was particularly difficult to find clothes to fit me as a smaller child, at young elementary school. In the second half of elementary school, I wore women's jeans, and my grandma had to hem them for me because I was tall in my class, but not super tall and not as tall as an adult, but tall for my age. I'm pretty average as an adult as far as height. So I remember that I had a neighbor and a classmate who had a swimming pool. Their family would let other children in the neighborhood come swimming, but they wouldn't allow me to come. Their neighbor also had two children who went to school with us. They were in different grades. They had a swing set, and I was swinging on their swing, and it wasn't one of those metal swings. It was one of those heavy duty wooden swing sets, but the chain wasn't heavy duty. It was, I don't know, fairly normal, but I was swinging really high and the chain broke. I didn't get hurt, but their parents blamed my weight for the chain breaking. But I didn't weigh as much as the parents. Still weighed too much, but not as much as the parents. That was before the swimming pool incident. The swimming pool, that was even more hurtful because then I knew, I understood I wasn't allowed to come swimming because of my weight. And that was particularly hurtful. I was left out. I was excluded frequently because of my weight. I'm not exactly sure when emotional eating started for me. I know that the first time I ate to comfort myself, I was approximately, I want to say I was about 3 years old, maybe four. And my parents were arguing in the living room. And I was in my bedroom. And I think my brother must have been at a friend's house or something because he wasn't here. My parents weren't violent with each other, but they were very loud. And I felt afraid and I didn't know what to do. But I remember going to the kitchen and opening the refrigerator and seeing only a package of bacon. I'm sure there was more than that in the refrigerator, but I just remember at my eye level, a package of bacon on a styrofoam tray with plastic wrap over it. And I remember sticking my finger through that package, the plastic, and peeling it back. And pulling that plastic film back enough that I could get a hold of a piece of that raw bacon and pull it out of the package. And I scurried back to my bedroom. And I had a dresser, and I also had a chest of drawers. And the chest of drawers was next to my closet door on the wall that was between the door into my bedroom and the closet. So I huddled next to that chest of drawers in front of my closet door, and I ate that piece of raw bacon. And they still were fighting and fighting, arguing. And I remember going back to the refrigerator again. And grabbing another piece of bacon and scurrying back to my bedroom and eating that too. I don't remember anything else after that from that day or that evening. I just remember doing that. I don't like bacon. I only eat bacon if that's what we're having. My husband loves bacon, and people look at me like I have three heads when I say I don't like bacon. And really, it was only recently when I was doing an interview with a guest for this podcast that I realized why I don't like bacon. And it's very likely this instance that I just described. Scurrying to the kitchen, afraid, looking for something to comfort me, and getting that raw bacon and scurrying back and eating it in secret in an effort to comfort myself. I don't eat as a means to comfort myself, in fear. I know that the emotions that I am aware of eating are stress and boredom. So I'm quite aware of those things, and I can work to not eat during those times, or be more aware of, hey, this is how I'm feeling and probably why I want something to eat. So food doesn't really make me feel safe. It definitely is, I would say numbing in some instances. I might even say entertaining for boredom. I don't have anything better to do because if we're being honest, food, when it tastes so good, it can really be, I suppose euphoric in some ways. And for that reason, I would say it might be entertaining. I don't know. But I remember the first time well, before I say that, I do remember praying as a child that I would be able to lose weight, and I would say, please let me wake up and not be fat. I didn't know how to lose weight. I didn't know how to do anything because I knew that I was very, very active. I was playing all the time and I played hard, hard. I wasn't really a snacker. My friends were snackers, but I didn't really need anything to eat. I just wanted to keep playing. My brother was a quote, normal, healthy weight. My parents weren't heavy, but I was. I think at age 14, I tried Weight Watchers for the first time and it was awful. So my mother paid for it and it was 1988, 1989, and that's when they had exchanges. I don't remember how you did that, but I think exchanges were servings. So you needed to have so many servings of meat, milk, and vegetables, and they gave you a meal plan with the items on there that you're supposed to eat. And there was liver on there, and there was no way in hell I was eating liver. In fact, that was the only thing that my mom would cook for dinner when I could have something different. Otherwise, it was, this is what we're having. If you don't want to eat, you don't have to, but there's nothing else. Yes, liver is a hard no for me. But even so, my mom was paying for me to go to Weight Watchers, but she wouldn't buy the things that I needed to be successful. So I didn't really lose any weight. Over the years, I joined Weight Watchers, I would say at least 10 times. And in more recent years, I was able to lose significant weight. But my starting weight was higher every time I started. And I would always get to a certain point, and it wasn't the same point, but I could lose a good amount of weight. And then I would be stuck. It was like I ran into a wall and that wall was not moving and I couldn't get around it. I couldn't get over it. I couldn't get under it. There was no way to make it any farther on my path. There was no way to lose any more weight. I think the last time I joined Weight Watchers was in 2022. And I had made it just about back to my absolute highest weight. My highest weight was in 2017. And I got up to a staggering 370 pounds. At that point, I couldn't find reasonably priced jeans that fit me. I was very angry because I am of the opinion that if you don't wear, okay, I'm of the opinion if, yeah, you just shouldn't hang out in sweats and leggings and things like that. To me, that's sloppy. But that's my opinion. And if other people want to wear those, that's fine. But for me, I don't want to wear that. I want to wear jeans and not the jeggings type of jeans, not the super stretchy, ultra forgiving jeans. I want regular, normal jeans. And I could find nothing. And it was, for me, it was demoralizing. I probably could have gone to a store like Bryant, or I can't remember. I think Torrid was open then. And I could have found something that fit me, but I didn't want to pay $50 for a pair of jeans. Call me cheap if you want, that's fine. But I didn't want to go to thrift stores because I hadn't really found, historically, hadn't found things at thrift shops that fit me. So I didn't want to go because I felt like it would automatically be a waste of my time. In May of 2022, I got my blood work and found out that my blood sugar was way high. My A1C was, I don't know. I thought it was a mistake because my blood work, like my numbers had never been so out of control. Like I never even tested as quote pre-diabetic. And so I felt blindsided and almost like I hit my head because I didn't understand. I felt so confused. And I remember showing my mom my labs, and she too seemed a bit confused, but she worked in healthcare. And she looked at me and she had a very concerned look on her face, and she said, "Is this yours?" And when I said yes, she said, "How are you upright?" To be honest, my fasting glucose was 410 and my A1C was 13.7. I was numb, but I shut it down. I did not eat sugar. I didn't eat sweets or junk or anything for like 10 months, shut it down because I understand the dangers of diabetes and I understand what I stand to lose by not controlling it. Mobility, eyesight, so much. And I'm not willing to risk that, and so I shut it down. I was able to go from 13.7 to 6.5, I believe, was my next one, and that was the finger stick one they did in the doctor's office about 3 months later. So I was able to get it to a reasonable, quote, acceptable range for my providers. But for me, that was still not acceptable. For me, actually, no, it was probably 6 months. But anyway, for me, acceptable is within the normal range, so less than 5.7. I got a new doctor. Before I say that, the first medication they put me on was metformin. I think they do that for everyone. And I did not do well on it. They were hell-bent to keep me on metformin, and it was not agreeing with me at all. I asked if I could take something else, one of the newer injectable medications like Trulicity, and I was told that that's a great option with metformin, so I would have to take both. I didn't want to do that. But I agreed eventually because I am I am who I am. And so that means that I'm willing to do what I need to do to get where I need to be if I know how to get there. So I took the Trulicity and the metformin in June. I stopped the metformin, so I hadn't even taken it in a month, and I only took the Trulicity. And I was having to meet with the pharmacist at my doctor's office every month to go over my medications and see how I'm doing, just to, you know, make sure that it, you know, it's working for me. And she asked me, you know, are you taking this? Are you taking this? And I told her, no, I took myself off the metformin. And she said, okay. And I said, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And to be honest, my blood sugar is lower without it than it was with it. And after that, they just let me be. And, but I went from taking a single medication for anxiety disorder and an allergy pill every day to needing metformin and or Trulicity plus a statin to protect my my heart and my brain from heart attack and stroke, and a low dose of lisinopril to protect my kidneys from the diabetes. I'm not against medicine, but I don't want to take it if I don't need it. And even then, I don't always want to take it. So in this case, I still didn't want to take it, but I'm not stupid. I understood why I needed to take it. I tried very diligently to lose weight. As I mentioned, I had made it back up almost to my highest weight. And so I began trying to lose weight, and I did. And I got under 300 pounds, but I hit that wall again. And I couldn't get around it, go through it, over it, or under it. And my cousin had bariatric surgery, and she was successful. And she wasn't a heavy child, but I had never allowed this to be an option for me. I was one of those people who was of the mindset of, oh, weight loss surgery, that's the easy way out. And it wasn't until like 2011 when my best friend had bariatric surgery, she had a sleeve gastrectomy, that I realized it's, you know, it's not that easy. Back then, she had to do so many different things before she could get approved for surgery. So she had to try different diets. She had to try, I don't even remember all the things that she had to try before they said, okay, we can try the surgery route. And it wasn't necessarily her insurance. It was the bariatric program. You had to try all these things. And I could see that it wasn't easy, but I also knew from being friends with her for so many years that she really did try hard to lose weight, and it wasn't coming off. And so, do I think that some people use bariatric surgery as a sort of magic potion or an easy fix for their condition? Sure, there are some people who do that. But I think most people are truly at a loss for how to lose weight and how to get their lives back. So, for me, I wanted to not have diabetes, and I did so much research on why, you know, like why your blood sugar is high in the morning and why is my blood sugar so high after I work out. And I was working out very intensely. I had a personal trainer and she was amazing and she worked me hard and I appreciated that. But every time we were finished, my blood sugar would be skyrocketing, like absolutely spiking up. And I was concerned about that because the information that I was given is, oh, exercise, that controls your blood sugar. It does. Sometimes not in the moment, though, because the exercise is stressful for your body and that causes your body to release more glucose into your system as sort of a, you know, like a fight or flight strategy to get you through. So that's fascinating. I have an incredibly high level of curiosity and I'm so fascinated by our bodies and the things that they do, that it does. So I wanted to know, how can I get my diabetes cured? What cures diabetes? Nothing. That's not acceptable to me. And so I kept looking and searching and something just kept nagging at me. What about bariatric surgery? And it was still no, no, no. And I'm pushing it away because that's not an option for me. It's an option for other people because I can lose weight. I just keep running into this wall and I know I can figure it out. I just have to figure it out. Also, how can I not have diabetes anymore? But then one day I looked it up and I, you know, Google is super helpful, right? But does bariatric surgery cure diabetes? Essentially, the answer is no. But for the majority of people, it puts you in, quote, remission. So I thought about it. And then I called my bariatric office that I went to, well, that I decided to use. They weren't my office before then. And they sent me this huge questionnaire PDF that I, this was May 2023, and I sat and I think it took me 2 hours to fill that out, but I would not let myself do anything else until I finished filling it out. And then I sent it back in and I picked my doctor and I picked my doctor based on her education. She is bariatric and metabolic medicine. And it wasn't just the bariatric part. It's that she has training in metabolic medicine. And so that's important to me because I don't want somebody who can just do bariatrics. I want somebody who understands more. And it doesn't mean that other people don't understand more. It's that I can see she definitely understands more at face value when all I have is face value for everyone. I see that she has what I feel like I need. She is probably the best and most compassionate medical provider who is a doctor that I've ever had. And she doesn't have a weight problem, but she seems compassionate in the way of somebody who does have a weight problem would be. Or you would expect someone to empathize with you because they definitely know what it's like. She's incredibly kind and dedicated and thorough. And at the same time, she's very friendly and easygoing and She's fantastic, and I would recommend her to anyone. My husband chose her for his bariatric surgeon, and my brother's wife picked her too, but then she went on maternity leave. Nobody knew she was pregnant. Well, that's not true, not nobody, but we didn't know she was pregnant. And so then my sister-in-law picked somebody else to finish her journey with, and she's had a great experience with her doctor.
Thank you for joining me for part one of my Barry story. Come back next week for part two, where I share more about my decision to have bariatric surgery and the results I've experienced, the challenges that are still ongoing, and some of my wins and how things are going now.